That's right, 19 minutes past 11 now. And George Irving's possibly best known for his portrayal of consultant surgeon Anton Mayer in Holby City. He's made regular appearances in TV since the 70s and his first role in When the Boat Comes In back in 1976. Since then, he's appeared in numerous classics, The Sweeney Professionals, Dempsey and Makepeace, and Bergerac, also starring roles, of course, in Dangerfield and the BAFTA-nominated Wing and a Prayer as well. George Irving's in town with us this week at the Theatre Royal in The French Lieutenant's Woman, starring with Anthony Howell, and he's with us this morning. I nearly said, Anton, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. George, good to speak to you. We'll talk shortly about your role this week in The French Lieutenant's Woman. First, that... I don't know if it's got to the petition stage yet, but a lot of folk want to see you back in Holby. I know that Connie and Rick and Chrissy are under a great deal of pressure there.
Yes,
will that
ever
happen again, George?
Well, I think, you know, I had a great time playing Mayer, and but I kind of got a feeling that he was a character that belonged in his time, you know. I mean, I think he's the kind of character that kind of belonged at the beginning of a series like that. He was such an enigma.
Because you left to go to America, I recall, after a bit of a problem with a patient, and
yes,
there was no guilt attached to you from memory.
No, there wasn't.
So there's the trip to America means that there's a possibility.
But it's not dead.
The door's always open. That's right. I did find, you're laughing just now, I did find one website with a rare photograph of you smiling, and that was a bit of a rarity in Holby, wasn't it?
I seem to recall it happened once. There was an episode in which Clive Mantle came back into the programme as Mike Barrett, and their relationship was based very much on taking the mick out of each other, and his first appearance was the only time I remember smiling in the locker room. You didn't see a lot of Mayer's teeth.
Not at all. And there was that famous quote too from Rick about Anton Mayer when Anton arrived at Holby. The line was, "He makes Attila the Hun look like Postman Pat." I thought this is finished up so well.
Yeah, well, I think he was deeply misunderstood. The man, he was just one of those people who didn't feel the need for too many social niceties when he was doing his job.
We never saw an incident in his home life, did we?
Well, no, that was one of the things about him that we were always very keen to do that. That it was very important that we kept him as an enigma. And there was kind of chat from time to time as to whether we were going to give him a girlfriend or not. And very wisely, I think, the decision was made that wouldn't be a good idea, because I think part of his appeal was the fact that you knew nothing about what went on outside the hospital.
That's right,
and that was one of the reasons, I think, where his time in the program was going to be limited, because you can only really keep an enigma like that going for a limited period of time, I think. So I thought I'd better quit while I was ahead.
If the petition ever appears, there'll be a lot of signatures, I'm sure, that from the west of Scotland as well. You did at one time, I know, consider going to university to learn one of the biological sciences.
I did, yes. Well, I was a scientist at school. I was very much a biologist. I was applying to university to do zoology at the time. I'd never been on stage in my life, and a friend of mine who I worked with on a Saturday in a supermarket asked me if I'd ever done any acting, and he invited me to join the local youth theatre group.
Your parents weren't all that keen on the idea at all, were they?
Well, I mean, you know, people forget. I mean, I come from the northeast. I come from South Shields, which is near Newcastle. People forget that until programmes like When the Boat Comes In the middle of the 70s, you'd never seen or heard a genuine Geordie on the screen. And so to actually announce in the middle of the 60s that you wanted to act was just the most ridiculous thing anybody'd ever heard. You hear Geordie accents regularly now on the screen.
You do, and also in commercial voiceovers. Commercial voiceovers used to always be straightforward, very, very, you know, English accents.
That's
but now
right.
We get commercial voiceovers from every part of Britain, which is
great. That's right. There are certain accents which people seem to trust, and apparently the Geordie accent is one of them.
Yeah.
So, yes, in the 60s, it wasn't the sort of thing you trumpeted about if you had any kind of ambitions to do anything remotely theatrical.
I watch Holby and Casualty, as perhaps you've realised already. Was there an extra load placed on you in the likes of Holby, and this must apply to Casualty actors too, to Charlie and the gang, learning the lines is one part of it, George, but you also had to be convincing the operating theatre too.
Well, I really enjoyed that aspect of it, because I did actually find out quite a lot about how the heart works. You know, I did spend a bit of time at Papworth Heart Hospital before we started. And I remember one extraordinary day when the first day I was there, I was tailing a very good consultant called John Dunning, and He went into an operation which he thought was going to last maybe 4 or 5 hours and went on, in fact, for 17 and a half hours. I was there for 11 of them. And he, at the end of which, he said to me, look, I'm sorry, I haven't actually been able to show you very much today, George, because I've been so busy with this operation. And I said, you know, John, you've showed me how to play the character here, mate.
Amazing.
Which is based. So very much I learned, you didn't just have to learn the medical technicalities. It was the ethos of what makes these people go the extra mile in order to say it. Because there is heroism in the NHS and there is heroism in that field. And I think it was important that that Mayo was a... I think Mayo was a character who people originally saw as a bit of a villain, but as time went on, it
was a clever villain.
He became a hero, I think, which I think was the point.
That's right. No, I think his approach in the theatre too was brilliant. Between the reaction between sergeants in the theatre, and your portrayal, I know too, of Anton Mayo was based to some extent on a heart transplant surgeon, wasn't it? Little bit.
Tony McHale, who wrote the early episodes, in fact, when we started Holby, we only had 4 scripts at the beginning of Series 1. I mean, when Holby's turned into the programme, at the beginning we had 4 scripts. The original script that I got, the character was called Hussein, and he was a Middle Eastern character. And that they knew that that was going to change. But that was because the impulse to create Mayo came from one of those day in the life things in the back of the Sunday Times magazine, which Tony had read about Magdi Yaqub, the famous Egyptian, the great Egyptian heart surgeon. And it was his day in the life in that had prompted Tony to conceive of this very brilliant but possibly quite difficult surgeon. And so, yes, he was part of the inspiration for it. And
did he ever see you in the series?
I don't know. I didn't.
He didn't write to you. He didn't email you. No, did he?
I did get a few letters from surgeons, and I was very pleased to get them. I think
what did they say?
Well, the ones that wrote to me.
Because there's always pomposity come out of you.
I know. The ones that wrote to me liked him very much. I mean, I think they, by that time, I think Mayo was making surgeons look good, and so they should be made to look good. But the ones that wrote to me were very complimentary, and they liked. We were very keen early on. I mean, I think it's still the case in Holby that medical accuracy was everything, and I did have a real consultant on the set called Sham Kolvakar, who would stop a take if there was a tube in the wrong place in a transplant, and it was, and I believe still is, medically extremely accurate. I have met one or two people who said to me in the street, you know, I've seen you do 4 heart transplants now.
Yes.
You could probably do
you
one now.
Do
you?
That's right.
Let me say, Mr. Butterfingers here.
No way.
I mean, the idea that an actor could do such a thing is ridiculous anyway, but particularly this actor.
Well, that's a good actor.
It was very flattering to convince people that I could do a heart transplant, but no, I couldn't put a tube anywhere near a human body.
I read that you found it very difficult to leave the character of Anton Mayer in the studio when you went home.
Well, in a way, I was very lucky to be involved at the beginning of Holby because I did have quite a lot of input into who the character was and where he was from, because they were very much creating these characters right at the start, and so I suppose there was a bit of an alter ego there going on. The darker side of myself, perhaps. But I suppose I was interested in playing someone who I envied in a way, and I found it quite difficult to. One of the things I found difficult about leaving Holby, although I was happy to leave, was the fact that he was so confident and so certain.
And we all know
that real life's a bit more difficult than that.
Yeah.
And so, being able to inhabit such a character was a fantastically liberating experience for someone who's actually a great deal more insecure than Mayo was.
So you see. You're in the Glasgow touring production of The French Lieutenant's Woman just now. Mm. Let's just recall how the movie starring Meryl Streep and Jeremy Irons was trailed on our screens 25 years ago.
Mm. It has been recognized as a masterpiece of modern literature. It has given the world a woman and a love story so mysterious and unique. Only an actress of the most special talents could portray them on the screen. Meryl Streep in The French Lieutenant's Woman.
And now you can enjoy the live theatre production of John Knowles' novel starring George Irving, is with us today as a special guest. On the face of it, that scene with Meryl Streep, George, gazing out to sea with the waves crashing around her, would be hard to create in live theatre.
Yes.
But I know the audiences and critics have been really impressed, in particular, by the theatre presentation of your production.
Good. Good to hear. It is a difficult novel to adapt because, it, as much as anything, it's about the writing of the story as much as it's about the story itself.
Because you're the author.
I'm the writer. Yes, I'm in fact, I'm the storyteller, in fact. And it's he's a kind of a presenter, but most of it is presented as these characters going on inside my head.
Okay, let's take a break from music and come back in a couple of minutes. I hope that we'll hear more from George Irving about the story of the French Lieutenant's Woman at the Theatre Royal. It's on until Saturday of this weekend. Today, you've just tuned in, you're just in time to hear part two of our conversation with actor George Irving. George with us today, and he's starring, of course, with Anthony Howell, best recalled as Paul Milner in Foyle's War. French Lieutenant's Woman is a production, Theatre Royal this week. Box office number for tickets, still some left perhaps for tonight and tomorrow evening, still a chance to go along. 0870-060-6647. Tell us a little bit, George, about the French Lieutenant's Woman. Set the 19th century, centred around London and Lyme Regis.
Mm-hmm. Well, John Fowles, who wrote the novel, always resisted having it turned into a stage adaptation, in fact. I think he kind of approved of the film, but it was very different. It was very different in treatment from the novel. And Mark Healy, who has adapted this version that we're doing, did an adaptation of Fowles' first novel, which Fowles liked very much, and so he collaborated with him, in fact, until his death last year. He collaborated with Mark on this treatment, and so this comes very much with John Fowles' approval all over it. It's an interesting treatment, because the thing about the story is that, yes, it's very much a Victorian love story, but in fact it presents a debate about whether or not you, when you are deciding how you live your life, as not only who you fall in love with, whether you follow your heart or whether you follow your head, and how these things can collide and the difference this makes in a person's life. So in fact, the man who plays Charles Smithson, in fact, the character, is in fact a surrogate character for the writer. So he's very much trying to, and indeed the French Lieutenant's Woman herself starts off the piece as an enigma, as a figure, and really the play, the course of the evening, is this woman revealing who she really is as a human being, as opposed to the iconic, attractive, beautiful, ineluctable Victorian figure that we start with. So it's really about this woman revealing herself to be who she is during the course of the evening. So it's a considerable journey. It's not just a matter of a simple Victorian love story.
Yes, but what has been admired, as I said, by critics and by audiences, is the way that this has been transported to the theatre. And a lot of what was said at the theatre production, they began to think this is made for the theatre. The film wasn't good. It was excellent.
Well, I suspect we're much closer to the spirit of the novel here. Yes. And it was these elements which made the novel as successful as it was in its time, I think. So I suspect that we owe a deal of the success of what we're doing to John Fowles, but also to Mark, who's adapted it extraordinarily well.
This will be your, I think, third venue. You played Windsor and Guildford, and I think
just Guildford. Windsor's next week. We've done 2 weeks in Guildford.
And as I say, critics have been kind to you so far with the production, and this will take you up until finishing in
End of November.
Yeah,
sometimes
so we've got time to go.
We're quite early on in the tour.
So, are you in a situation where you've planned ahead? Are you going to get a break over the festive season after this, or are you plans for other things?
Yes, I hope so. Yeah. Yes, I'm sure I will.
Yeah. Some time off.
Last Christmas, just before Christmas last year, I do again for the over 50s amongst us. It's something that I discovered a few years ago. My friend Clive Mantle, 5 years ago, said to me, "I've got a booking form here for a charity trek to the Everest Base Camp. Do you want to come?"
And you did.
And I did.
Yes.
Since which time, I've become completely hooked on this. And last Christmas, I did another one. I went back to Everest. I went back by a slightly different route. and you get to considerable heights. You get to about 18,500 feet. But the extraordinary thing is that, having discovered this in my 50s, what you discover when you get there is that people in their 40s and 50s adjust to altitude much, much better than people in their 20s and 30s.
Gives a whole new meaning to Antoine Mayer's walk with me.
If anybody out there in their 40s, 50s has any compulsion to do anything of this kind, then do it, because the chances are you'll survive it well.
Yes, yeah. Well, if you're fit, you look relatively fit.
Well, I'm averagely fit, really. I mean, people think that you've got to be super fit to do these. It's not an extreme thing at all. But it does turn out that because adjustment to altitude has got very little.
I'm trying to think what height oxygen levels become about. You're 18,000 feet.
It starts to get a bit thin at about 10, 11, 12. It starts to thin out a bit. So you're getting, you've got about 50% of the oxygen that you have at sea level when you get to that height. But it's extraordinary. People don't quite know why it is, but older bodies adjust to that bit better.
Well, that's reassuring. Good to hear that. That makes my future more reassuring. He said. Most of us recall, George, your parting shot in Holby. I think it was Mayer was suspended over a case that I mentioned briefly earlier. He was cleared, but told to put Operation Success Statistics before lives. Do you recall that?
Yeah,
parting,
I remember it
that
clearly.
Parting, my death rate, how did that go?
I can't remember quite how it was. My figures would always look a bit bad because I go the extra mile. Because come to me who other people wouldn't touch.
That's right.
No, and and this became a cri de coeur, and a lot of the surgeons who have spoken to me said, thank God that somebody said this, because there was a situation developed in New York, in fact, where they published these success rates of surgeons a long time ago. And there were people driving their children around from hospital to hospital trying to find a surgeon who would take the risk on a patient because they were scared that the effect on their success rates.
Misinterpreting the figures and the reasons for the figures. Entirely,
yes, it's happening to a lot of our culture, I think, that the measurement of things is becoming more important than the teaching and the learning of things.
George Irving, it's been great to talk to you. Great to meet you as well today.
It's been a pleasure watching
you on television, and we can watch you in theatre this week. French Lieutenant's Women, Theatre Royal in Glasgow. There are perhaps some tickets left for the performance tonight and tomorrow. The box office number again, 087-060-6647. George, thanks again.
It's been a pleasure.